Well, we're going to continue on with our look at the Gospel of John. If you're new with us, we want to make sure that you feel welcome this morning. We've been going through John's Gospel, and our series is called To Engage. And our desire is that we would be able to engage the one true living God, that we would be able to engage his scriptures, and that as a result, we are able to engage our world and our community in a way that is honoring to God, beneficial to them. And we've been camped out the last couple weeks in John chapter 15. We are going to finish that one up and start to bleed into John chapter 16. This morning, this is the title of what we're going to be looking at, The Danger of Being Liked and the Reality of Being Hated. Okay, so I had one of my kids saying, why'd they pick you for that, Dad? Is that because you're the dentist and everyone hates to see you anyway? Are you used to that? I don't think so, but maybe. Anyway, if we would take a recap, John chapter 15, we would see that Jesus is with his disciples. They're in the upper room. Jesus is getting ready to go to the cross very soon, and he is really, bringing these guys together, and he said, this is what it's going to be like when you guys, you know, are on mission. And, if I could, just imagine with me, let's try and put it in a setting that maybe we can relate to a little bit more personally, okay? Let's say Jesus is CEO of Almighty and Sons, and he's going to start a new business venture. And he's got his team together, and he wants to tell them, like, this is what you can expect to be part of this organization. First of all, Jesus told his disciples, this is your relationship that you're going to have with me. He said, it's like a vine and the branches. He goes, if you abide in me and you let me abide in you and my words abide in you, you're going to bear a lot of fruit. If you want to separate yourself away from me, that ain't going to work. He says, the result of this abiding is because it's life-giving. It's energizing. There is fruitfulness. It's a growing and a giving type of relationship. There are resources there. So he's telling his guys, he goes, when you go out, if you abide with me and if you're with me and you let me and my words abide in you, there are resources. In fact, he said, if you need something, you ask me and I'll give it to you. And if it's on the mission that we have together, you can see the guys just going, I like that. Abundant resources. Abide with him. I like that. And he said, you know what? This is how the team is going to relate to one another. Jesus told his disciples, he goes, you must love one another. Now, the type of love that he talked about was called agape love. And the type of love in the New Testament that is agape love means that it's the type of love that comes from God. It is sacrificial, it is loyal, it is committed type of love. It looks at the other person, what do they need, what will benefit them, and what can I do to move in that way in order to meet that need. He goes, guys, if you're going to go out, this is what's going to happen. He goes, I am going to be committed to you. I will sacrifice for you. I will be loyal to you. In this room, he goes, if you want to be on my team, this is what's going to characterize you guys. You're going to have each other's backs. You're going to look at the interest of the other guys on your team to make sure that what do they need? What can you do to help them out? It is other-focused. It is loyal. It is committed. It is sacrificing. And if you're sitting there just kind of going, I like that. Man, resources? Someone's got my back? Someone's building into me? Man, I like this. And he said, you know what? You're going to need these resources. You're going to need this kind of commitment from one another because, as we'll talk about today, what are the disciples' relationship to the world? He goes, I'm sending you out to a place that's going to absolutely hate you and despise you. That's your territory, guys. You're going to go out and they're going to despise you. The market that you're going into, they're going to hate you. But remember, there are resources and there's commitment for you, and you're going to need them. He says this, he goes, if the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. Jesus is saying, look, this is what's going to be going on. He goes, when you go out, you're going to encounter some people in the world. Now, when he talks about the world, he's not talking about the earth. He's not talking about the physical world. When the New Testament uses the word world, it's talking about a world system. A world system that has turned its back on God. A world system that is infused and permeated with sin. It's anti-God. It's rebellious. It's sinful. It's Satan-driven. It's completely against the things of God. That's what it talks about, the world. It's this system. And he said, you know, when you go out there, you need to understand that this system and these people that want to participate in this system, this territory that I'm saying, it's going to hate you and it's going to despise you. But it's not because of you. It's because of me. He said, before the world will ever hate you, they're going to hate, it's because they hated me. He said, now, there is another choice. He goes, now, if you were of the world, he said the world would love its own. Now, this is not the type of love that is agape love, sacrificial, committed, loyal, giving. This is a type of love in the New Testament that is referred to as phileo love, which means to treat someone special. This is a type of love and a fondness that we can have with one another. It means that out of the group, you got a best friend. Out of all the people in the world, you chose this one to be your spouse, your best friend, the one who's close to you. It's a special thing. It's a special type of love. And he said, you know what? If you want to embrace this worldly system, if you are still of the world, of this rebellious, deceptive world system, he goes, you know what? The world would really love you. The world would treat you special. The world would see that you would stand out. The world would really, really, really like you. You could even become popular if you want to embrace the world. If you want to live in that system, it'll back you. It'll encourage you. If you want to embrace the darkness and the sin, there are many, 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 many who will cheer you on and call you best friend, special popular guy, special popular lady. They will love you. Some of you that are just maybe a little bit older, maybe you're in college, maybe you're a little bit out, I want to ask you, do you remember that guy? Well, what guy? The guy maybe in high school that was just a normal guy, didn't stand out, nothing really outwardly special about him. Maybe he was in one of your classes, that's how you knew him. But as he got a little bit older, maybe senior in high school, maybe into college, you found out that this guy really wanted to embrace his sin. He became the party animal. He became popular because if you were going to have a party, you had to have this guy there. You had to have this guy here because you know what? This guy will embrace the dark side. And he is popular and he is well known because when he is there, he will do things that, man, he will throw up in rainbow colors. He will say some of the most amazing things when he is under the influence of something else. He will say things and do things that we will laugh at and we will encourage and we will fan those flames. And man, he is popular. Do it some more, Dave. Come on, Scott. Do a little bit more. Lead us in this rebellion. Show us your sin. Throw off all restraint. Or that girl, maybe a little plain looking, maybe didn't get attention, but as she got a little older, she found out that she could be treated special too. She got herself a pair of high heels, a push-up bra, and an attitude, and all of a sudden she wants to give herself away to any guy that wants her. Because it's easy to become popular. Just embrace that darkness. Embrace your sin. Embrace this anti-God movement. And boy, you will become popular. Everybody knows her. They make sure if there's social gatherings, they call her. If they need a date, they will call her. She's got the latest clothes. She looks good. She's used well. And boy, does she stand out in a crowd. And the crowd is just there applauding, saying, do it again. Do it again. That's what you're known for. That guy, that girl, well-loved, special, popular, stand out, destructive. He says, if you were of the world would love its own, but because you are not of the world, why are you not of the world? He goes, because I chose you out of the world. I chose you out of the world because, and because of this, the world hates you. He said, you know what, guys? The world hates you and will despise you. There are those that will, because it first hated me. The reason why they're going to hate you is because I chose you. It's not because you're so awesome. It's not because you did something really great. It's not because you spoke so cleverly. It's because I chose you, and you are now finding your identification in me rather than in the world, in that system. You see, you now wear my jersey. You now wear my badge. You are now identified with me. Because you're identified with me, the reality is that if you continue in that abiding, you need resources, they're there. That abiding, you need some sacrificial love. You want to be able to be a giver and not a taker, it's there. It's part of your identification with me and being on my team. And he goes, but be assured, because you're going to wear this jersey and you're going to speak things about me and you're going to live in the truth, there are people who are going to despise you. And it's not because of you, but it's because of me. He goes on to say, remember the word that I said to you? He said, a slave is not greater than his master. You see, he spoke this when they first started this meeting in the upper room. He started to wash their feet. And they're just going, oh, gee, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? He goes, look, is a slave greater than his master? There's, you know, well, of course not, of course not. He goes, look, I am serving you. I'm the master. I'm washing your feet. Do you think you're above me? Of course not. Then I expect you to serve others too. This is agape love, sacrificial, giving, loyal, committed, okay? That's part of the package. That's part of your identification with me. And he says, a slave's not greater than the master. He goes, if they persecuted me, they're going to also persecute you. He goes, do you somehow think that you're going to rise above me if I'm the master and they persecute me, that they hate and despise me? Do you think they're going to somehow treat you better as you identify with me? Of course not. He said, you know what? If they kept my word, they're going to keep yours also. You know, when we go out and we start talking, we have conversations, when we want to speak the truth about the scriptures and about Jesus, there are people that listen to it and they are drawn to it. They keep his word. They want it. And it's not because we're so clever. It's because of him. He goes, if they will keep my word, they're going to keep yours also. But we have to also understand, when they despise it and they react negatively, when they react with hatred, it's because of him. It's part of the package deal. Resources, agape love, and hatred and animosity. So you say, why all the hatred? Why all the hatred? Well, he goes on, he says, you know, but all these things they will do to you for my name's sake. He says, because they do not know the one who sent me. First of all, he's saying, you know why they hate me so much, why this world system is so much against me, is because they really don't know me. They really don't know the one true God. They have no idea who the Father is. Part of it is ignorance. They don't know. Now, they may pretend to know. They may hear about God but not really know him. But many times what happens is that many people, because they don't know God, what they want to do is they want to come up with their own idea of what God must be like. Well, God must be like this, and God must be like that. And in their own reasoning and thinking and experience and circumstances, they start to pluck out these little tidbits on what they think God is like, and they put it together. They make this straw man, and they go, this is must be what God is like, and they take a couple steps back and look at it and say, I hate that. Why would I serve a God? Why would I want to join a God like that who is evil and cruel? Why would I serve a God or want to come to a God who's a killjoy? Why would I want to serve some God who's nothing more than distant and aloof? Why would I want to serve a God? He doesn't care about me. He doesn't care about people. Why would I want to care about a God when I lost my job and it's his fault? I lost my parents and it's his fault. My wife left me and it's his fault. Thing is that you're basing your presupposition about God based upon things that are not true about God. You don't know what you're talking about. You have no idea what God is really like, and as a result, you have your presuppositions about God based upon your own sin and evil and enmity towards God, and you just continue to reinforce it. The reason why they hate God so much is because they really don't know what he's like. Second of all, he says they don't really know God, but the thing that Jesus does is help them to really know their own sin. Jesus goes on to say, if I had not come and spoken to them, they would not have sinned, but now they have no excuse for their sin. He's not saying that people in the world were living in some sort of sinless state when Jesus came, then they had sin. What he's saying is that they had really no knowledge of their own. They really didn't understand the depth and the reality of their own sin. But he goes, you know, when I came, there are things that I spoke and there's things that I did, and now there's no excuse. They know about their sin. They understand about their sin. He goes, he who hates me hates my Father also. If I had not done among them the works which no one else did, they would not have sin. You know, what were the things that Jesus said that caused people to hate him so much? Claim to be one with the Father. Boy, that just ticks me off. That just chaps my hide. Was he lying? No. When he said, I and the Father are one, people said, you're blaspheming. You're blaspheming my imperfect character of what I think God should be like. You're telling me the truth, but it just chafes me. The other thing is he goes, you know what? Jesus said, I did some things that no one else did. You know, people can come and talk about God. They can talk about being the Messiah. And in fact, the scriptures say there were many that came before Jesus that said, you know, that I am the chosen one, I am the Messiah. And they could talk a big game. Jesus not only spoke the truth, but he did stuff that verified who he said he was going to be. He turned water into wine. He made lame people walk. He made a blind man see. John records a lot of these miracles. And in fact, he said, you know what? If I had not done among them the works, these events, these things that no one else did, they would not have sinned. But now they have both seen and they hated me and my Father as well. They have done this to fulfill the word that is written in their law. They hated me without a cause. They saw the power and the majesty of what Jesus could do, and they hated him because of it. What did he do that was so hateful? Made the wedding celebration go on, turned water into wine. Doesn't that just tick you off when people do that? A guy that had been paralyzed for decades tells him to get up and walk, and he does. Boy, if that just doesn't make, just make you want to scream. Made a blind man see. Raised Lazarus from the dead. Took a boy's lunch. Fed 5,000 men and their families. What is so hateful about, what is so evil and wicked about that that would cause people to hate him? The reason why is because the words that he said and the things that he did revealed who he was, holiness and power. And when they saw their own selves stacked up against that, they didn't like what they saw. Because what they wanted was they wanted their own kingship over their own lives. They wanted their own authority over themselves. They loved their sin so much. They loved the popularity of their wickedness. They loved the feeling of their immoral pleasures. They loved that. It was special to them. They wanted to be king and queen of their lives and their universe, and they wanted no one to come in and start messing with that. And so they despised the one with his words and his deeds showed that they were wrong. I've always wondered with those that hate God so much, what did God ever do to you? What did God ever do to you that would cause you to hate him so much? Many times you can't have that conversation because it just spins off out of control so quickly. But the hatred that the world system has against the Christ is the reality that we must embrace because we wear the team jersey. So what do we do about it? If it's the reality of the package that we get to be part of in our identification with the one true living God, well, how do we respond to this? Well, one is that we begin to hate the world. We begin to hate the world. You hate me, I'm going to hate him back. You drew first blood, I'm coming after you. Everything is a fight, okay? Now, for those of you taking notes, need to make sure you understand that. Okay, right now, on this slide, okay, the sarcasm button is being pushed, okay? Please don't think, okay, Greg said, okay, I got to hate the world. Okay, yeah, that's a good one. I'm going to hate the world. No, okay? Who's ever read that book by Smalley, The Five Love Languages, you know? Yeah, there needs to be a guy edition because we've got two, okay? We've got two love languages. One is sarcasm, and the other one we engage with our wives, okay? But those are the things that we, guys really like sarcasm, okay? So this is it. We begin to hate the world. Do you know Christians like this? Everything's a battle. Everything's a fight. Everything's a protest. Nothing's right. They may be part of the kingdom, but boy, I tell you, you want to say, why are you so angry all the time? Why are you so grumpy all the time? Why is your evangelistic efforts always start and end with you're going to hell? Why is everything a fight with you? The other thing is that we want to hide from the world. If we're not going to fight against it, then we're going to hide from it. It's like, gosh, there's this evil and there's this animosity out there, and I'm afraid, and I don't want to be part of it. And, you know, there are Christians, you know, and they're being killed for their faith in other parts of the world. And here, guys are losing jobs because of it, and people are losing relationships because they identify with Christ. And there's, you know, look at the culture. Man, it is just swirling around the bowl right now. It is just getting bad. Yeah, so I'm going to stay inside, and I'm going to listen to my my Christian CDs, and I'm just going to just go to Bible study. I'm going to hide. Man, can't be part of that. And there's no engagement with anybody except for family, other Christians, because they're afraid. It's okay to be with other Christians. But you know what? When Jesus was getting ready to ascend, He didn't say, go and hide. He said, go into all the world. Go into all the world. Talk about me and live for me. See, because when we want to become haters, it's got consequences. It's not good for the kingdom. It's not good for the reputation of the one true living. When we become hiders, man, it's just like we're not even in the game at all. And even though these two options have some negative consequences, I really think the next one is the one that has the greatest destruction for the kingdom. And that's when we still strive to be loved by the world. I'm not saying loving the world. What I'm saying is that we strive to be loved by the world system. We still want to be popular. We still want to be well known. We still want people to applaud for us. We want people to like us, and we want people to treat us special. And it's like, well, what's wrong with that? When we go to the world system for those things, when we want to go to the darkness, and when we want to go to our sin, and we want to say, you know what, I want these people, I want them to like me too. I want my Christian friends to like me, but I want the rest of the world to like me. I just want everyone to like me because it feels good and it's comfortable. But when we start to live in this middle ground here where it's comfortable and no one bothers us, and we want to play a life of defense all the time, what happens is that we find that what we're doing is that we are trading faithfulness for being liked. Instead of being loyal, we want to live in the lie. Instead of being committed, we want to be compromisers. And as that goes on, as we stand for nothing, eventually we compromise in everything. Living in the middle ground causes us to continue to compromise for the truth that is found in God, and as a result, we start to compromise on everything. Not all at once, but as we continue on, we compromise here, we compromise here, we compromise here. I want to be liked. I want to be appreciated. I don't want anyone to say anything negative about me, whether it's a truth or whether it's a lie. And as a result, we find our lives are doing nothing more than blending into the middle ground because it's safe. Kenny Luck is one of my favorite authors, and he says it a lot better than I can. He goes, loss of a strong identity of Christ has created a culture of Christian men who are more at ease chasing cool and being liked. We want to be admired and respected, but not really known. Sexual conquest, physical attractiveness, recognition, and status have landed many of God's men in a stupor of self-importance and spiritual insignificance. It's a subtle game, he says, but it's a game nonetheless. They are hitting off the crack pipe of being liked, which is too intoxicating to give up. Being liked is a charade, it's an act, and it's a fraud, and it's a shadow of what a real God's man is supposed to be. The only outcome of a life devoted to the shadow is a life that is controlled and dominated by sin, because there's no honesty in that life. Because where there's no honesty, there's sickness of character, which is expressed in sickness, in a sick conduct and sin. And we wonder why we fail in our relationships with God and with people. We live in this middle ground. And as we go on, we find out that because we want to be liked by the world and we want to blend in with the world and we don't want to take a stand for what is true and right, I'm not talking about being arrogant, not talking about being bullheaded, talking about just standing up for the truth and what's right, the jersey that he has put on us because he called us and he chose us to be part of him in his kingdom. But we continue to compromise and we find out that what it's doing is it's starting to affect our relationships with our spouse, our relationship with our kids, our coworkers. And we think we're trying to pull this great con game, and we think that we can impress God, but in the end, neither one, God nor people, by our act. In wanting to be liked by the world, they look at us and they just say, you know what? I see your act. I'll applaud your sin, but I see your act. Do you remember that guy? The one that everyone just said, did you really respect him? Do you like how his life is turning out? As soon as he said, I don't want to do that anymore, he was left high and dry. You've probably experienced that yourself. Eventually, you're going to have to choose. And eventually, you're going to have to make a stand. And the longer that you're in the middle ground, eventually you're going to have to make a stand, and the world will despise you, and they will hate you, no matter how long that they have treated you special. And those that really mattered in your life will still be in the wake of your compromising decisions. In Mark, there's an account of Jesus when he encountered some who did hate him. The Pharisees and the religious leaders, of course, they hated him so much they were going to kill him. But as we see in his earthly life as he was leading up to them, they wanted to try and trick him, and they wanted to try and trap him. They wanted to try and take away his message. And so it says, then they sent some Pharisees and Herodians to him in order to trap him in a statement. They came to him and said, Teacher, we know that you are truthful and you defer to no one. They said, you know what, we've been listening to you. You speak the truth, all right? You defer to no one. You are not partial to any. You teach the way of God and truth. We understand. You're your own man. You can't be swayed by special interest groups. You speak the truth, you stand for it, and you're not swayed. We see that. So let me ask you this. Is it lawful to pay a poll tax to Caesar or not? The religious leaders say, you know, we're under Roman occupation, these pagans, these dogs. We're supposed to take some of our money and we're supposed to give it as a poll tax to this pagan guy, Caesar, who thinks he's God. We know he's not God. Should we do that? What do we do? He says, but he, knowing their hypocrisy, they're just trying to trick him. He said to them, why are you testing me? He said, bring me a denarius to look at, and they brought him one. A denarius was a coin of the day. It said, and he said to them, whose likeness and inscription is this? And they said, well, it's Caesar's. He took the coin, he said, whose face is on this? Is this printed? They go, well, it's Caesar's. Yeah, this is Caesar's government. Caesar's got the monetary system. It's the Roman Empire. This is his, okay? His image, his likeness is on the coin. He goes, well, give Caesar the things that are Caesar's. He needs the poll tax, his poll to give it to him. And he goes, but give to God the things that are God. And they were amazed. I said, what does it mean? Does that mean give God part of the poll tax? No, it goes back to this issue. Whose likeness is on this? It comes from the Greek word icon. You see, in Romans 8:28, it says this about our relationship with the Lord. He goes, for those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to become conformed to the image of his son. In Colossians, it says, we and our transformation, our salvation, he goes, we put on the new self who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. You see, when God chose us, God selected us. What he did is he goes, I am stamping my image on this individual. These people, they have my image, my icon. It is part of them. My inscription is on them. When the Holy Spirit comes to us at the moment of our salvation, it has been declared in the heavenlies and in the court of God, this person is mine. And Jesus is saying, you know what? This is Caesar's coin. It's got his image on it. Let him have it. These people who follow me, they've got my image on them. They are mine. Image and likeness declare ownership. These people are mine. What happens is that this image begins to manifest itself. The reality of the one true living God begins to manifest itself in the heart and the life of a believer. He says, you know what? Those that he foreknew, he predestined to become conformed to the image, the likeness, the inscription of his son. All of a sudden, the things that characterize Jesus start to characterize us. Courage to face our fears. Honor that we give to God. Honor that we give to our fellow man. We start to develop a proper attitude with the sovereignty of the one true God, and because we are his, a proper attitude towards ourselves and our circumstances. We start to develop a mental toughness so that we can make the right decisions. Purity of heart, mind, and body. As he starts to grow and change us, it's the integrity to stand for the truth, even in the most difficult of situations. We take ownership for that he's placed in our care. We submit to him as he navigates our life. That we understand that our life is not just for ourselves, that it's for the honor of God, the benefit of others, and that we realize experientially and through knowledge and through truth that our joy, our satisfaction, and our life in the one true living God is indeed full. That is identification in God. People, it's time to kiss the middle ground goodbye. It's time to stop blending and finding our appreciation from a world system that is bent on sin, selfishness, and something other than God. It's time to kiss the middle ground goodbye. And you may be thinking, how do I do that? I had a guy after first service came up to me. He goes, remember when you talked about that guy? And I said, yeah. He goes, I was that guy. Started in fifth grade, and until I was in my 30s, I was that guy. Are you that guy? Are you that girl? Are you that man? Are you that woman? And you say, you know what? I am tired of finding my identification in my sin, and that's all I got. I'm tired of where my life has led, and I'm at the bottom, and I don't want this. Is there any help? Maybe you are a Christian. They say, you know what, yeah, I'm tired of wearing the reversible jersey. I'm tired of wearing the jersey that identifies me as a Christian, and then when I get into another company, another culture, another group of people, I am so quick to change it. I am tired of my compromising, and I need help. What will help me? He is the help that we need. Jesus says, you know, when the Helper comes, the Holy Spirit, when the Helper comes, whom I will send to you from the Father, that is the Spirit of truth, not the Spirit of comfort, not the Spirit of pleasure, not the Spirit of no trials, the Spirit of truth, who proceeds from the Father. He will testify about me, and you'll testify about me also. The Holy Spirit will come, Jesus said, and he will, at the moment of your conversion, he will come in, and you, if you want to, he will control you. And he will start to change you. And where your own efforts have failed, the Helper is there to help. I think one of the great examples is Peter. Because shortly after this discussion in the upper room, they go to the garden. While they are in the upper room, Jesus said, you know, someone's going to deny me. One of you guys is going to deny me. In fact, all you're going to die me. He goes, not me. No way. Uh-uh. Not me. I'll even go to prison for you, Lord. And they're in the garden. And the guard comes up and they take Jesus. They're going to take Jesus away for this mock kangaroo trial. Peter, full of testosterone, full of emotion, full of good intentions, pulls out his concealed carry sword, wants to fight. He's there. I'm here, Jesus. I'll take a bullet for you, Jesus. We find out that just a couple hours later, Peter's denying that he even knows Jesus. Three times. People come up and just say, "Aren't you a Galilean? Weren't you with him?" "No, uh-uh." "No, wait, I saw you with him." "No, someone else." "Uh-uh, no, it's not me." And in fact, I said, a girl came up. "I saw it. Weren't you with him?" And the scriptures say, he cursed. They said, "I don't even know him. I don't even know him. Look at my jersey. I'm with you guys. Please like me. Please don't hate me. Please don't despise me. They're going to butcher this guy. I don't want that." Jesus dies and rises again, spends 40 days with his men. Tells them to go to the upper room in Jerusalem. Wait for him because the Spirit will come. And when the Spirit comes, Peter's a different man, isn't he? Peter goes out to preach boldly, clearly, with great conviction about Jesus. They even arrest him, put him in prison. He goes, "I consider it an honor that I get to suffer for him." They told him, "Stop. We'll let you out. Just stop." He said, I can't. They even crucify him. He knew he was going to be crucified upside down. He goes, "Crucify me upside down because I am not worthy to be crucified like my master was, right side up." What's the difference? Wasn't protein supplements, okay? Wasn't some new tough guy course. His help came from the helper. His life was changed. Guys, remember that guy? How's his life wound up? He embraced friendship with the world. How's he wound up? Do you respect him? Do you want to be like him? Think, guys, about some of our favorite movies, some of our favorite stories, some of our favorite tales. Men who will stand up for the truth against great opposition. Men who will sacrifice themselves for the weakest, for the helpless, against great odds. Men who will stand for the truth in the most difficult of situations, even if it costs them relationships, resources, sometimes even your life. And we watch those things and just kind of go, I'd love to be like that guy. You can. Because Jesus said, he goes, whom he foreknew, he predestined them to become like his son. And you can bear that image. When we get out of the middle ground and we start walking with the one true God. Can we have the praise team come up? You know, if you're that guy or that gal, you say, you know what, I've been at the bottom. I need help. And it might be that it's today that you have to call out to the helper. You have to call out to Jesus. And you need to say, you know what? I found my friendship with the world, and it has sold me so short. I need the one true living God. Please come and save me from my own sin. And maybe you're someone who's in the middle ground. You just say, I'm tired of this. I need to know the truth. What do I do? I want you to keep coming here. I want you to open up your Bible. I want you to find someone that might say, you know what, I need someone to help me understand what God is because I've got a misplaced notion on what he's like. If you're a guy, if you're a man, I'd like you to join us on Saturday mornings at 7 o'clock for the Men's Institute. Because what would it be like to have an abundance of spiritually passionate, mature men and women who've kissed the middle ground goodbye and make a strong, dynamic impact on this community and the lives of others because of his name?